Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Hello, Luke O'Neill here, and welcome to Show Me the Science, my weekly podcast. Now, this one's a request, and as I often say, very happy to take requests. I do get a fair few, and I'm hoping to get through them all. This one came in a few weeks ago, but I came across it, and I'm very happy to give it. It is the science of type 1 diabetes, and it's for Sarah. Sarah Lamb asked me to give a podcast on this topic, and Sarah, I jumped at it, to be honest, because this is really in my wheelhouse, as the phrase goes, because immunology is front and centre on this one. And because type 1 diabetes is a classic autoimmune disease, and as anybody listening would have heard of it, it's so common. It's remarkably common, in fact. And it's caused by your own immune system going into your pancreas, killing your beta cells. The beta cells make insulin, and insulin is extremely important as a hormone, and insulin is needed for you to absorb glucose from your diet. And if you can't absorb the glucose, it builds up and causes all kinds of harm. And this is a lethal disease if left untreated. The mega breakthrough came, of course, with Banting and Best, famously Canadians. In the 1920s, they discovered insulin, and they realised that was the thing that was down in type 1 diabetes. Now, what's interesting is it's different to type 2 diabetes, and we often talk about type 2 more than type 1. Type 2 is different. Type 2 is you're resistant to insulin, so you can't respond to your own insulin. Type 1 is you're not making the insulin because you've killed off the cells that make it. And both involve glucose going through the roof in your body and all kinds of other complex metabolic effects. So both type 1 and type 2 involve insulin. Type 1, you can't make it because the immune system has destroyed the cells making it. Type 2, you make it, but your body stops responding and you become resistant to insulin. And there are treatments for type 2, which I may do type 2 again. Things like metformin can work there and render your body sensitive to your own insulin. Of course, the famous GLP-1, Ozempic, will do this as well. In the case of type 1 diabetes, it's a bit simpler because you can't make the insulin. The blood sugar goes up, and that can have all kinds of consequences. Symptoms early on, and it often happens in childhood and in people in their early 20s, of course, because the immune system begins to attack. Thirst is often the first symptom. You're awful thirst that's impossible to satisfy. You urinate a lot more. You're pushing out urine. Your body's trying to get rid of all this glucose, and so you're peeing all the time. And that's horrible. You know, that can be very uncomfortable. And that's a key symptom. Hunger. You get really hungry because your body isn't absorbing the nutrients anymore, and that sends a signal to your brain to eat more. You lose weight. You're a type 1 diabetic as well. A lot of weight loss can happen as well. And then you'll feel very fatigued because all this glucose clogging up your system causes effects on the brain as well, and you get terrible fatigue. And then vision problems, because the eye gets full of sugar as well, and that can interfere with how the visual system operates. And then nausea because of all this high glucose. These are standard symptoms described, by the way, thousands of years ago. This has been around for a long time, this disease. And they're obviously, eventually, this can get worse and worse. And now that's worst. Your kidneys get damaged because of all the loads of glucose in your body. You get horrible ulcers. If you get a wound on your legs, often the ulcers grow because there's lots of sugar feeding the bugs there to cause these wounds to get really, really infected. And then the eye effect often turns into blindness because the eyes get very damaged by this. Now, this doesn't happen anymore. Most of those don't happen now because we've insulin to treat it. Of course we have. So when Banting and Best first discovered insulin, that was a huge breakthrough. Nobel Prize, of course, for Banting because of this fantastic discovery, because now you can inject insulin into people with type 1 diabetes and it does the job reasonably well. Now, there are issues. I suspect Sarah's contacted me because it's not ideal, this situation, having to inject insulin and what's your diet and all this sort of stuff. There are very convenient ways to do it now. So there has been great progress, very worthy Nobel Prize. And in fact, when you read the description of what Banting did, it's quite remarkable. He realises insulin is the problem here. Now, he was working on hormones. Lots of people at that time were interested in hormones. Insulin had been discovered. It was tied into sugar. So eventually Banting puts two and two together and realises that insulin could be used to treat this. They start making pig insulin initially. They can purify it from pigs. And that worked in humans. It was great. And the very first major trial they did, and this is such a great story, I think. There was a hospital, I think it was in Toronto, if I'm right. They were Canadians. And there were like 30 kids in comas in a hospital ward because of type 1 diabetes. Because ultimately the glucose is so high, it puts people into a diabetic coma. He injected the first child and then went to the second. By the time he got to the 15th kid, the first kid woke up. And then one by one, all those children in that ward woke up. Now, the parents were there. Can you imagine their response to this? I mean, talk about a hugely dramatic, effective medical advance. Tremendous, you know. And we'd like all diseases to be like that in the end, of course, to be treated in that way. But this is a huge achievement, and all these children waking up and their parents. You can imagine the joy of that. And so, as I say, insulin is now the way to treat type 1 diabetes. I'll come back to the therapies in a moment. Now, once they realised it was to do with insulin and the immune system, the big question is, why are people attacking their own pancreas? And it's partly genetic, as ever. And there are people carrying variants of immune genes that put them at a huge risk of diabetes, and they're all in the immune system. And that's the first thing to say. Now, what are these genes? Things like HLA molecules, not to get too technical, HLA-DRB1, HLA-DQA1. These are very important on switches for the immune system. Those proteins I've just mentioned are presenting bits of insulin to your immune system, and your body thinks that's alien. So the HLA system, it's evolved to present, we use the word present strangely, pieces of bacteria usually, or viruses, to the immune system to wake it up. In this case, they're presenting bits of your own insulin, and now your body thinks that's a foreign thing and begins to attack the insulin. And that's how this disease works. And of course, insulin is called an autoantigen. We use the word antigen for what the immune system presents. Another one is called GAD65. That stands for glutamate decarboxylase, another mouthful. That's made in the pancreas as well. So in effect, what's happening is your immune system thinks your own insulin or another protein in the beta cells called GAD45 is alien and begins to attack it, and then begins to kill the cells where these things are found. The beta cells are making the insulin. Well, they have the GAD65, and now the immune system goes in there as if it's been infected by a virus. But it's autoimmune. It's bits of your own body that are now seen as alien, and the immune system is programmed to attack them. And all those advances were happening from about the 1960s on. These immune genes are described, and these autoantigens are now described, insulin and GAD45 being the two key ones. And there's been loads of effort now to try to stop your body overreacting to these things, which I will come back to. But the genes involved are in the immune system, but it's not just genetic. There's about a 70%, the way we know that is identical twins. Now remember, identical twins have the same genes. If one twin has type 1 diabetes, there's a 70% chance the other one will get it as well. Not 100. That's very important. If it was 100%, that means it's purely genetic. And we know other diseases are purely genetic. Huntington's disease, if you carry those gene defects, both twins get Huntington's 100%. They use the word penetrance for this. It's to do with genetic penetrance. If it's fully penetrant, it means those gene variants are fully causing disease. They're penetrant because they're penetrating into the system, I suppose, where the word comes from. In this case, there's a 30% at least environmental factor. Now, what is that? Well, we think it's an infection. And there's various viruses that have been implicated here. Nothing's really been tied down fully yet on that. One of the mysteries. But again, you can imagine you're carrying certain genes. Both twins are carrying the same immune system genes. One gets infected maybe in childhood, the other doesn't. And that triggers diabetes in the one who's been infected and triggers the immune system to go into overdrive is the idea here. And lots of efforts now to try and understand that more and more. So we know it's about 70% genetic, 30% environmental. If we could find the virus that's causing it, there'll be a vaccine to stop type 1 diabetes, which would be a great advance. But the trouble is, they've had trouble pinning that down. There's been a few candidates have come and gone. It's not like MS, which we know is caused by Epstein-Barr virus now. But still, there's still efforts afoot to try and find out what the viral triggers might be, because you could then vaccinate against it. So we know it's the immune system. We know it is insulin now going down because the beta cells are being attacked by the immune system. And let's look at the treatments. Now, well, first of all, diagnosis, actually. How do we diagnose? It's easy to diagnose. It's high blood glucose. Obviously enough, because you can't absorb all the glucose. But there's a thing called HbA1c. That is a protein called hemoglobin. And when you have type 1 diabetes, sugar, the sugar is so high in your blood. Now, the hemoglobin, remember, its job is to carry oxygen. But lo and behold, lots of the sugar molecules cling onto the hemoglobin. And you can measure that. It's called glycated hemoglobin, which means the sugar stuck to it. And that's a diagnostic. So if your hemoglobin is all sugary, That's a good indication that you've got high blood glucose and it's a bit easier to measure. There's also a thing called C-peptide, which is a piece of insulin, and that goes down because obviously you can't make the insulin. And it's, you can measure insulin itself, but it turns out that C-peptide is easier to measure. They're the two current diagnostics. You're measuring a piece of insulin, and if that's near zero, type 1 diabetes. And secondly, if all your hemoglobin has loads of sugar attached, you've got high blood glucose, and that's the other diagnostic. And these are 100% accurate. Measure those two, you can diagnose this 100%. Now, the treatment, insulin, obviously, the Banting breakthrough was fantastic. And over the years, different formulations, you can inject it, of course, is the key thing that diabetics do. There are now all kinds of ways to do this. There's pumps, there's an artificial pancreas kind of, and that can detect blood glucose. And when it begins to climb, you release a bit of insulin, just like your pancreas normally does. Because remember, the pancreas is sensing the level of glucose all the time. And when it goes up, it makes insulin to help your body absorb it. So they've managed to recreate a pump-based artificial pancreas, which can be very useful as well. Of course, people with it, these things aren't 100% sort of effective. They're a big contribution. Of course they are. But people still need to be careful. They might need to follow a dietary plan. They'll be careful on the sugars and so on. Anybody with type 1 diabetes knows this. So it's all about management as well, and that helps as well. And one that I think that's very interesting is psychological stress makes type 1 diabetes worse. And that must be to do with how we're burning glucose and so on. So any kind of way to relieve the stress of it is really important. Exercise can be very beneficial. Support from family and friends and your GP. These all make a difference as well. So at the moment, it's reasonably well treated with various ways to give insulin, careful management of diet, and then support. All of these things really help as well, which is great to see. And so therefore, the vista of someone with it going blind and all those horrible things is almost zero now because of all these different effects. And that's really good, obviously. Now, the next thing then is to talk about what's coming down the track. Now, what's really interesting is lots of research is happening here. And one reason for this is it's so common, and wouldn't it be great to cure it? Stopping in its tracks would be tremendous. Secondly, it's kind of seen as a model autoimmune disease. So if we can crack type 1 diabetes by targeting the immune system, we could crack any autoimmune disease. And there's so many of these. Things like MS, for instance, or lupus. These are all autoimmune. So drug companies see this as a gateway indication into other diseases as well. So there could be all kinds of benefits from coming up with a way to treat it, I guess. And that all of these new therapies are targeting the immune system. But before I do them, actually, it's worth emphasizing as well, can you just replace the pancreas? Islet transplantation, so the pancreas can be transplanted into someone, that works a bit. You can grow beta cells in a dish from stem cells now and use them, and that's being tested as well. It could well be a disease which would really benefit from stem cells, because if you just, the beta cells are being attacked, what if you use a different beta cell just to go in and then sense the glucose and make the insulin? That'd be wonderful. And there's lots of efforts afoot using stem cells to grow a pancreas and then put it in the body, or grow a clump of beta cells in a sort of a special device, and all that's really underway as well. There may be an answer there, of course. And that's the cell therapy type approach. But the immune therapy approach is getting interesting as well. And I'll give you a few examples, and this really illustrates how many trials are running. Well, first of all, actually, the stem cell stuff, there's four trials, big trials running at the moment, using stem cells to grow beta cells to replace the ones that have been damaged. And again, optimism, phase two at this stage, but still, they're underway. Now, in the immune side, there's a drug called teplizumab, I'll say it again. That's targeting a thing called CD3, which is on these T cells that bust up the pancreas. Take them out, and now the attack goes down, and that could be very useful. There's also a thing called a GABA receptor agonist, which can boost insulin production from the pancreas as well. Several trials are running on an immune on-switch called CD40 ligand, anti-CD40 ligand. They're underway as well. Now, those approaches are trying to temper the immune response against your own pancreas. They're more powerful immunosuppressants that could really work. Now, sometimes they've used immunosuppressants in type 1 diabetes, but they can have side effects and they can be problematic. These are kind of tailored immunosuppressants that really suppress the immune attack on the pancreas. And the last one is to expand things called regulatory T cells. Now, it turns out there are many off switches in the immune system to dampen down the immune response. A big one are called Tregs. They're a subset of T cells that can turn off the immune response, and they're being studied massively here because they're another big off switch a drug called MTX-101, for instance, that's been tested to expand Tregs to switch off this over-immune response. And it does sound very complicated, doesn't it? But I guess what's happening there is immunologists have discovered all these on and off switches. The on switches are on in the type 1 diabetic and the off switches are off. Can you mobilize the off switch or switch the on switch off, if you know what I mean? Both approaches could be equally good here. And these things often work really well in animals, and now they're being tested in humans. So you wouldn't believe the number of trials running with different approaches to stop type 1 diabetes in its tracks. And the future here might be as follows. You're born with the genetic variants that put you at risk. You start developing symptoms, and then your doctor will give you some of these new immunosuppressants that could work really well. Or secondly, they might give you stem cells to replace the damage that's happening. Wonderful thing to do. Or you can maybe the artificial pancreas might get even better, I suppose. So what that tells us is there's many different options out there with these trials running. And I predict, looking at it closely now, the next 2, 3, 4 years, lots of these trials will really read out. Many are in phase 2, phase 3, which means they've worked a fair bit already. So there's a lot of optimism out there now that type 1 diabetes could well be the first autoimmune disease that we stop. Now, wouldn't that be tremendous, using these different approaches? Because as I say, it becomes a gateway then into other autoimmune diseases as well. You know, so as well as stopping it in its tracks for people who are at risk of it, what they're finding here could well work in any autoimmune disease. I think what's especially relevant here is we know what the autoantigens are in type 1 diabetes. It's insulin and this thing GAD65. And you can get the immune system now to ignore them, you know, and not attack them is the idea. And if you know what the autoantigens are, that gives you a bigger chance. And type 1 diabetes is a good example of that. So again, one to watch very closely. Lots of research going on as ever. A lot of optimism out there that type 1 diabetes will be a thing of the past again. And especially some of those approaches I mentioned, they're nearing the end of the trial process. And hopefully one day will be approved for anybody with type 1 diabetes. There you go, Sarah. That's the science of type 1 diabetes. Hope you got some good information there. And remember, my podcast is a News Talk production, available every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.